Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Do we have the book? Yes, Bhagavatam. Yes, there we go. Thank you. Okay. January 7th, 2012, in Rotterdam, Belgium. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 8, Text 27. Tadanim api parshva vartinam. Atmajam. What does atmajam mean? That's a very good guess. Have the word from in there. A son, yes. Good. Atmajam, someone who's born from you. Yes. Atmajam ivanu sochatam abhivikshamano mriga eva binishvesita mana vishrija lokam imam saha mrigena kalevaram mrittam anuna mritta jan manush mitir. Okay, so mrittam mritya, what does that mean? Death. And then we have janma, birth. Anushmitir. Shmitir means remembering. So mritya janmanushmitir. Any idea what that might mean? Remembering one's, yeah, after death, remembering one's previous birth. Itaravan mriga shariram avapa. So mriga means what? What's a mriga? Well, migrari, ari is enemy. Animal, particularly here, the deer. So migar shariram, what's a sharira? A body. So migar sharira, he got an animal body, he got a deer body. Okay, let's go over the word for word. Tadanim, at that time, api, indeed, parshva vartinam, by the side of his deathbed, Atmajam, his own son. Eva, like. Anushochantam. Okay, what would that mean? Sochati, nikarshati. What is lamenting? Yes. Lamenting. Abhi ikshamanaha. What's ikshana? Eyes, good. Sing. Mrige, in the deer. Eva, certainly. Avinishechita manaha. His mind was absorbed. Visrija, giving up. Lokam, world. Imam, this. Saha, with. Mrigena, the deer. Kalevaram, his body. Ritam, died. Anu, thereafter. Na, not. Mritya, destroyed. Janma anusmritihi, remembrance of the incident before his death. Itaravat, like others. Mriga shariram, the body of a deer. Avapa, got. This is a very sad verse. It's a very sad and unfortunate verse. One of my friends recently was saying how that any other devotee in the Hare Krishna movement, even if apparently they're your enemy, if in front of them you were dying, they would try to liberate you. Would you say that's a true statement? If you were leaving your body and there was another devotee there, even if during your life they'd been your enemy, would they chant to you? I think so. If you saw another, if you saw anybody dying, no matter who they were, would you chant to them? There was a story when the devotees were preaching behind the Iron Curtain. They had to go in disguise. You know, if they were found out to be devotees preaching, they would be arrested, tortured, given all sorts of psychotropic and psychoepileptic drugs, and many of them died. And one time when they were driving, the devotees were driving, there was a car accident. And the traffic was all backed up, so they got out of their car, and they went to see what was going on. There was a long-time traffic jam, and there was some very big person in the Soviet army, like the second in command in that region. So this is a person who had authority to be arresting and torturing the devotees. And they see that he's lying on the road from the car accident, and it was very obvious that he probably wasn't going to survive until some ambulance came. And this general is looking up, and he sees the devotees. Of course, they weren't dressed as devotees. The devotees had to go in disguise. And the devotee said, I'll see if we can help. You know, we have somebody. We'll send them to the... In those days, there weren't mobile phones. We can send them off to the exit and call an ambulance. And so the attachés of the general were very happy. And they said to the general, this gentleman here, he's helping you. He's going to get help for you. And the general looks up, he's barely able to speak, and he says, who are you? And this devotee had a different name, but he said, Krishna. And the general said, Krishna, and he died. So that's the mood of the devotees, that the devotees will try to liberate even their enemy. The devotees, they don't want anybody to have to suffer. They don't want anyone to take another birth or go to the hellish planets. So what to speak of when what we're about to read today, this is very sad. This is a very unfortunate situation that someone who is the emperor of the world, the son of Maharaj Rishabhdev. Maharaj Rishabhdev is an incarnation of Krishna. So he's the son of an incarnation of Krishna. He was the emperor of the world. He ruled as a not just a pious emperor, but as a Vaishnava, and he helped the whole world to come to Krishna consciousness. Such a great devotee, and then at the proper time, he wasn't attached, although he helped so many in the world to come to Krishna consciousness. He wasn't attached to his power and prestige. You know, if we run a little project, we can become attached. If we've got five people listening to us, we think, oh, I'm a very big person. And he had the whole world was listening to him, and he had no, it said he gave it up, just like after you use the toilet, you give up what remains there. You don't keep any attachment to it. You don't think, oh my, you know, excrement, how lovely it is. And that was what he's thinking. He just left everything. And he was in samadhi, exhibiting the symptoms of ecstasy and bhava. And what happens to this person? This is the fate that happens to Bharat is not the fate that we would wish even on an enemy. Translation. At the time of death, the king saw that the deer was sitting by his side, exactly like his own son, and was lamenting his death. Now that happens. If you take care of an animal, the animal will lament when you die because you're their source of sustenance. Actually, the mind of the king was absorbed in the body of the deer, and consequently, like those bereft of Krishna consciousness, he left the world, the deer, and his material body, and acquired the body of a deer. However, there was one advantage. Although he lost his human body and received the body of a deer, he did not forget the incidents of his past life. So although this is very sad, there is a bright side to this. There's some silver lining in the cloud. That although he had the external body of a deer, he had human consciousness. Not only human consciousness, but remembrance of everything that happened in the past life. So in one sense, having human consciousness in the body of an animal would be great suffering. You know, animals just living outside, there's no shelter, there's no real way to communicate. It's really a hellish existence, and you can only tolerate it by having your consciousness covered. But on the other hand, by having human consciousness, he was able even in the deer body to progress. And in fact, the deer body acted as an impetus for him to become very serious, as we were reading in the previous purports, that he had become negligent. And by getting the deer body, all of a sudden, he's like, I'm not going to become negligent anymore. He became a very serious devotee deer. And, you know, Jananandan Maharaj compiled a book about animals and Krishna consciousness. Maybe some of you have seen that book. But there's been some... Yeah, leaves are not very comfortable in garlands. There's some extraordinary stories of animals that have been associated with the Hare Krishna movement. I mean, there's one story I had personal experience with where this young man joined the movement with his cat. His cat was named Tom, because he was a tomcat, so he named him Tom. And this cat would, in the temple room there in North Carolina, there were windows. The top of the temple building was just the temple room and a little pujari room, and there were windows all around the base. Like here we have windows, but the windows in that temple room go all the way to the ground. And the cat would sit outside the windows. Every morning for Mangal Arati, this cat was sitting outside the windows, singing along with the devotees in his own way. And he would come every morning for Mangal Arati, and he'd come every morning for Bhagavatam class. And he'd be quiet during class until it was time for questions. And as soon as it was time for questions, he would start meowing. And he didn't, you know how cats usually clean themselves, so he never did that. He was a very scruffy, you know, avaduta kind of cat. And he didn't eat normal food that cats eat, which made him actually quite ill, because cats can't, constitutionally, physiology, in terms of their physiology, they can't be vegetarians. But this cat was a vegetarian, so he wasn't very healthy, and he didn't live all that long. And he would eat prasadam, and he would eat prasadam that no cat would eat. You know, he would eat things like watermelon, and it was very odd. And then he would eat with his paw. He wouldn't eat with his mouth like a cat, but he would take his paw and grab the prasadam and put it in his mouth. So it was a very odd cat. The only cat-like thing he did was to father some kittens on the property. That was his only... And we presume that may have been why he took the body of a cat in the first place. But it was... sometimes had these experiences of having animals who were associated with the Hare Krishna movement even, who did not display the normal behavior of animals. So this was, of course, Bharat Maharaj's position also. And in one sense, as we said, this was a benediction. This was how Krishna was pushing him to become serious. Of course, Narada Muni also did this to the sons of Puvera, that he put them in tree bodies with demigod consciousness. So that although they're, which in one sense you could say is a worse punishment than being a tree with tree consciousness, because you're very aware of your situation. But it also, on the spiritual platform, allowed them to progress. Okay, we're going to read Prabhupada's purport here. There was a difference between Bharat Maharaj's acquiring a deer body and others acquiring different bodies according to their mental condition at the time of death. After death, others forget everything that has happened in their past lives. But Bharat Maharaj did not forget. According to Bhagavad Gita, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam twaja chante kalevaram tam tam eva tukanteya saratad bhava bhavitaha. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. After quitting his body, a person gets another body according to his mental condition at the time of death. At death, a person always thinks of that subject matter in which he has been engrossed during his life. According to this law, because Bharat Maharaj was always thinking of the deer and forgetting his worship of the Supreme Lord, he acquired the body of a deer. However, due to his having been elevated to the topmost platform of devotional service, he did not forget the incidents of his past life. This special benediction saved him from further deterioration. Due to his past activities in devotional service, he became determined to finish his devotional service even in the body of a deer. So in other words, this seeming difficulty actually increased his, it revived his determination that he had allowed to slacken. It is therefore said in this verse, Mrityam, although he had died, Anu, afterwards, na mritya Janma Anush Matir Itaravat. He did not forget the incidents of his past life as others forget them. As stated in Brahma Samhita, Karma Adinir Dahati Kintu Chabakti Bhajam, 554, it is proved herein that due to the grace of the Supreme Lord, a devotee is never vanquished. Due to his willful neglect of devotional service, a devotee may be punished for a short time, but he again revives his devotional service and returns home back to Godhead. Translation again. At the time of death, the king saw that the deer was sitting by his side, exactly like his own son, and was lamenting his death. Actually, the mind of the deer was absorbed, mind of the king was absorbed in the body of the deer, and consequently, like those bereft of Krishna consciousness, he left the world, the deer, and his material body, and acquired the body of a deer. However, there was one advantage. Although he lost his human body and received the body of a deer, he did not forget the incidents of his past life. So here Prabhupada says, willful neglect, and in the previous purport, Prabhupada said twice that it was intentional. He used the word purposely. He called here his purposeful mistake. Purposely commit some sinful activity. So Prabhupada is very clearly indicating that the fall down of Bharat Maharaj was purposeful. So I find this section of Bhagavatam very scary, because we know whatever we're absorbed in, that's where we're going to go. And can we really say that our mind is always absorbed in the lotus feet of Krishna? Manmana bhava mad bhakto majaji mam nirastrum. Are we always thinking about Krishna? I was just hearing a lecture yesterday where Prabhupada was talking about how you must control the mind. You cannot trust the mind. And he's talking about how you can control the mind through tapasya and through the system of yoga, which most of us can't do that. Most of us don't have the strength to do that. He said, oh, you can automatically control the mind by always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord. But if we examine where our mind is, it may not always be on the lotus feet of the Lord. We may celebrate if our mind's on the lotus feet of the Lord for 5 minutes or a half an hour or an hour. I had one devotee once in Chaupati years ago say, how can I think of Krishna at work? And I say, well, first think of Krishna during your japa. And the whole room was silent. You know, so it's a little scary. You know, we don't know, are we going to be as fortunate as that Russian general and have some devotee at the time of our death saying Krishna to us? We may die alone, or we may die surrounded by our attachments. You know, the deer had left and Bharat Maharaj was looking, where's my deer, where's my deer, where's my deer? And then right as he dies, there's his deer. So how do we know? You know, at the time of our death, maybe the greatest objects of our attachment, whatever they may be, are going to be around us. Maybe there won't be devotees around us chanting. We see sometimes devotees, they leave their bodies in the holy dham in the midst of kirtan. Sometimes they leave their bodies alone. All different circumstances. There's no guarantee. And even if we're surrounded by other devotees, ultimately we have to fly our own plane. Prabhupada said you get help on the ground. You know, when you're training to be a pilot, you get help on the ground. And even at some point, you know, someone goes in a plane with you, like when you learn how to drive a car. There's special cars, right? Where there's, do they have those in Europe? Where the instructor also has pedals. But eventually you have to drive your own car. Now, at some point, you have to fly your own plane. So this is scary. Especially since, you know, one devotee said to Prabhupada, sometimes we fall into Maya. Prabhupada said, no, you're always in Maya. Sometimes you fall into Krishna. Now, so here, Bharat Maharaj has this willful, Prabhupada uses the word willfully and purposefully. He's willfully and purposefully engaging in Maya. He's willfully and purposefully giving up his Krishna consciousness. And this story reminded me, when I was reading this verse, I kept thinking about a story that happens a little later in the Bhagavatam of Ajamila. Because Ajamila was also calling for his son. Here it says, like his son. Atmajam Eva, the deer who he thought of like his son. But Ajamila had his actual son. most people would be more attached to their child than to their pet, we would assume, generally. So John Muell's attachment was very strong. But his attachment to his son, who, by the grace of the Lord, was named Narayana, saved him. Although John Muell had been much more fallen than Bharat. You can't compare on the external platform how fallen John Muell was to how fallen Bharat was. And yet, John Muell being attached to his son, just by calling the name of his son, Narayan, became saved. And Bharat, by being attached to his pet, became, at least externally, degraded. He had to wait some time. He was at a kind of diversion in one sense. So I was meditating, what was the difference here? And John Muell's fall down is always categorized as accidental. Whereas here, Bharat's fall down is characterized as willful. So I thought we'd look at the difference between accidental and willful fall down, what they are, and how we can avoid each one of them. Because we can't guarantee, even if our fall down is accidental, that the Lord will have some sort of extraordinary intervention that will call out Narayan at the time of death. So what is accidental fall down? Okay, let's look at Bharat and John Muell. So Bharat's doing his duties, and he happens to see a deer in distress. John Muell's doing his duties. He happens to see a prostitute and her boyfriend. So in neither case did either one of them seek out a distraction. You know, even Bharat, who's as fall down is described here, is willful. He didn't wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to leave my Krishna consciousness. So it wasn't willful in that sense. Both of them were, in one sense, victims of circumstances. Now, both of them responded by meditating on that circumstance. John Muell, he just was thinking of this woman constantly. You know, again, it was very similar. Bharat was thinking of the deer constantly, even though for some time they both went on in their external behavior. So there was a time that John Muell was still serving his parents and doing his brahminical duties and taking care of his wife, but he was always thinking about this woman. And he very gradually brought her into the house as a servant, and then eventually he let go of his wife. He sent her away, presumably, or she left him. And he neglected his parents, and he entered into a different life, where John Muell gave up even the superficialities of devotion. And Bharat also, we see he gets gradually more attached to this deer. And interestingly, although he keeps the superficialities of devotion, he's doing this pretend meditation, fake samadhi, was how it was described in the other verse. So what makes one accidental and one willful? Well, one difference is that Bharat was at a much higher level of advancement than John Muell, at least from what we describe in the Bhagavatam. John Muell was not already on the level of bhava. So my own understanding about the difference comes from a statement Srila Prabhupada makes, which I mentioned the other day, about that one does not fall down from bhava because he sees, as Prabhupada puts it, the naked form of material desires. And there's a nice story in the Odyssey. Prabhupada sometimes quotes the Odyssey, although he usually quotes a different part of it. So did you all learn your Greek mythology? So when Ulysses is coming back from the war of Troy, he has many obstacles he has to face, and he's generally warned about them beforehand. So one obstacle he's warned about is the island of the Sirens, from which comes the English word siren, meaning a warning. And on this island, it was a desert island, on which there were witches who would eat human beings. But because they were witches, they had magical powers, and they would sing. And when they would sing, it appeared to be a tropical island with beautiful young women and all sorts of pleasures. So Ulysses heard about this, and therefore he instructed all of his men to put in earplugs so that they wouldn't hear the song of the sirens. But he was very interested. What is the song of the sirens that can make somebody see an illusion and lose their mind? He was curious. So he didn't plug his ears, but he told his men, tie me to the mast of the ship, and any orders that I give while we go past this island should be ignored. Don't listen to consider I'm a madman as we're going by through past this island, and after we're well away, you can untie me. So the men, seeing the island for what it was, they were rowing as fast as they could, and Ulysses, meanwhile, was straining and wanting to go there. So I see this as the difference. The person on the stage of Bhava, they see Maya for what it is. They see, not that Maya Devi herself is a witch, but she's a Vaishnavi, but the consciousness of wanting to be the enjoyer is like a witch. It's like a ghost. It's like, Rupa Goswami says, it's like being ghostly haunted or like being, illusioned. And the person in Bhava, they don't see the illusion. When they look at Maya, what do they see? They see a desert island with a pile of bones and some witches, basically. They don't see it as enjoyable. It's just like if you have some sort of food that you're allergic to or that makes you sick, even if it's a very attractive food. Like I have one friend who has celiac disease, and she told me if she eats a little bit of wheat, she vomits. So if she looks at a cookie or a cake or, something very attractive, she sees it as pain. She said her doctor asked her, do you ever cheat on your diet? And she said, I can't. She said, the moment I cheat on my diet, I become sick. So whereas Ulysses, who was bewildered, he wasn't able to see Maya for what it is. So in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about the fall-down sequence. He's by contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment. From attachment, lust arises. From lust, anger. From anger, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. When intelligence is lost, one falls down into the material pool. So Ajamil wasn't able to recognize at the contemplation stage, or at least at the attachment stage. I think he was able actually to recognize at the contemplation stage. But he wasn't able to recognize at the attachment stage that he was in illusion. He wasn't able to see it for what it is. He thought, oh, this is very nice. Whereas Bharat Maharaj could tell even before the contemplation stage that this is illusion. Therefore, his engagement in Maya was willful and it was intentional because he could see what he was doing. Of course, we might ask the question, why would anybody willingly go into an island of cannibalistic witches? I don't think there's a rational answer for that. And of course, this is the perennial question in the Hare Krishna movement. Why did we willfully fall down from Krishna consciousness? Why did we willfully, intentionally, purposely come to this world? Now we see for both kinds of devotees, the devotee who on a lower platform has an accidental fall down, and the devotee on a high platform who has a willful fall down, that Krishna's kindness is still there for them. Even though they may have to go through some tribulation, Bharat Maharaj had to go through some tribulation. Even Ajamil, he had to see the Yamadutas, which isn't a very pleasant experience. But still, Krishna doesn't leave his devotee. Apichet Sucharacharo, Krishna says, even if my devotee does something abominable, he'll quickly become righteous and become rightly situated. Don't ever look at a devotee and see, oh, they are just an ordinary person engaged in sinful activities. Now, of course, the devotee shouldn't take advantage of this kindness of the Lord and engage in willful, sinful activities. Basically, we can understand that a willful fall down is a fall down that for me, at my level of advancement, that I can understand long before I'm overcome by it, that it's a fall down. And an accidental fall down is something that I don't even know I've fallen down until I'm completely covered. After I'm covered, I'm like, oh, what did I do? After you yell at the other devotee and after you break the thing and throw something across the room or whatever, then you realize, oh, I became bewildered. Whereas the advanced devotee, they don't get to that point. Sometimes you see that the misbehavior of a devotee, they'll say, I didn't even know it was coming. All of a sudden, I was overcome. Someone just wrote me that the other day. I don't know how it happens. All of a sudden, I'm angry. I don't know where it came from. In other words, they don't see the other stages. They didn't see the contemplate all. It happened. It appeared to them to happen quickly because it was just, they didn't see that it was Maya. So that's accidental if you don't even know that you're in Maya. At a certain point, like, oh, I'm in Maya. But willful, you know, you see, oh, that's Maya. If I contemplate that, if I get attached to that, then I'm going to lose my intelligence. Oh, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'll do it anyway. Krishna will save me. It'll be all right. I'm an advanced devotee. So one shouldn't, although Krishna will save one, one shouldn't take advantage of that. One shouldn't say, well, you know, I can do whatever I want. That's, of course, sinning on the strength of chanting. And Prabhupada says, he was asked, should they give up chanting then? Prabhupada says, no. He said, eventually. He said, it may take 700 births to become perfect that way. Because that's the opposite of the servant mentality. That's thinking, Krishna's my servant. I'm going to make a mess and Krishna's going to clean up after me. Right? That's how a little child feels. Little child thinks, I'm going to make a mess and my mommy and daddy will clean it up. I don't have to clean it up. Right? The devotee doesn't want to inconvenience Krishna. All right, well, how to become free of accidental fall down? So first of all, start cultivating an awareness of what triggers our difficulties. To have some honesty that when I'm in this and this situation, I tend to lose my intelligence. I become lusty, or I become angry, or I become greedy. Right? Trividam narakarshenam, dwaram nasharam atmana, kama krodas tata lobas, tasmat etvam tvayam tvajet. A sane man gives these up, but you have to recognize them before they overwhelm you. Once they overwhelm you, you know, then what do? Write letters of apology. And, I mean, you know, that's a little difficult. So to start practicing, what are the circumstances in which I have difficulty? Let me see them from a distance. Let me develop some thoughtfulness. And of course, that comes by hearing. And not hearing officially, not just, okay, I'm doing my reading time. Okay. Or just reading so you can fill out a test. You know, I pass my Bhakti Shastri exam, I can answer all the questions. But actually hearing to try to understand for myself. You know, Bharat Maharaj now, he really knows what Maya is. I mean, if he didn't know before, he really knows now. And you find the instruction he gives to Maharaj Rahugana in his next life. It's pretty heavy. The forest of material enjoyment. And I know one former sannyasi who left the movement, married a non-devotee, fathered a few kids, and then came back. And what he said to me, I lived the fifth canto. It's all true. So Bharat Maharaj, he's now in a position that he can really understand, look, you don't get involved with this. So we shouldn't have to learn that by such an extreme experience. We should be able to learn by hearing. What is the nature of Maya so we can recognize, oh, that's Maya. And not just the gross forms of Maya, but the subtle forms of Maya. So that means really hearing with rapt attention. And also means association. We've pointed out many times that at the very ending purport in this story, the end, the very end of the whole story, at the end of the instructions of Bharat Maharaj, Prabhupada says in a purport that Bharat Maharaj's main mistake was failing to consult with his guru and living apart from the other devotees. And interesting, what we're going to read in the upcoming verse is that as a deer, what did he do? He went back to the same ashram and hung out with the sages who he should have hung out with intimately in his human birth. So having good association, I mean, one reason that we like to live in close proximity to each other is so somebody else can point out when we're in Maya before we've fallen so far that we become a deer. And that's really a hard way to figure out you're in Maya. You know, and it's not pleasant. It's not pleasant to have somebody come to you and say, you're off. It's very unpleasant. The ego doesn't like it at all. Anybody here like that? If you say you do, I'm not going to believe you. We'll test you later. But that's part of why we have the Association of Devotees. That's part of the reason I have a guru. Gurus, but Prabhupada was just on this lecture yesterday, Prabhupada was saying, guru must chastise. And then it was funny. He said, but you're all grown up. He said, and the problem is that after age 16, if you chastise someone, they may break. He said, and anyway, I'm old and you're young, so how can I chastise you? I'm just begging you, please shave your heads. But it's one of the reasons that there's guru, to be able to say to you, you're doing something wrong. You know, not just to smile at you and to take your flowers. And that's why there's sadhu. Sadhu is one who cuts. So we should all have at least one person in our life, at least one person who we're able to hear from. That if that person says, your behavior is not good for your spiritual life, that we'll be able to say, thank you. And that even if our ego is churning, we'll be able to control it. And if we can't listen in the first 5 minutes, then at least after 5 or 10 minutes, we'll be able to listen and take it on board and meditate on that. Then also having a full schedule of engagement. Prabhupada talked about this a lot, not having any gaps. Not giving Maya an opportunity to seep in. Now, this does not mean that we're crazy, workaholic, busyness people. That's not what it means. It doesn't mean that we never have any time to think, and we never have any time to relax, and we're always working like it's a marathon. That's not what it means. I met one devotee who left Krishna consciousness, and when I asked him why, he said, for 15 years, I was doing service 7 days a week, 14 hours a day, and after a while I realized that I didn't know who I was anymore. He said, I never had any time to be introspective or to find out who I was, to find myself. So when we say have a full schedule of Krishna consciousness, that includes three kinds of duties: ordinary, emergency, and it's the last one Prabhupada mentions, Bhagavad Gita. Ordinary activities, emergency activities, and desired. So what are your ordinary activities? Well, all of us have ordinary activities, 16 rounds, many of us three Gayatris, attending the morning program, right, hearing the class. Then we have duties according to our particular position, whether we're a man or a woman, a grahastha, a sannyasi, a vanaprastha, a brahmachari, what our talents are, what our abilities are. Those are ordinary activities. Then emergency activities should be reserved for emergencies. Emergencies shouldn't happen very often. There shouldn't be more than like 3 to 5 days a year max of emergencies. Emergencies, somebody's sick, somebody broke their leg, you know, you have to fill in for them, there's a snowstorm or something. An emergency, you can do basically anything. You know, and then there's desired activities. Desired, what I like to do. What do we like to do? And if you don't have any desired activities in Krishna consciousness, you're going to make room for Maya. Krishna says, one who's temperate in their habits of eating, sleeping, working, and recreation can mitigate all pains by practice of the yoga system. There has to be some Krishna conscious recreation. Must be. And for each of us, they'll be different. For somebody, that's going to be, you know, growing a garden and growing some flowers for the deities. For some people, that's going to be doing some embroidery. For some people, it's going to be taking photographs. For some people, it's going to be learning songs. For some people, it's going to be doing their own extra study of Prabhupada's books in a way that they really like. I mean, for each of us, they're going to have their different areas that are their Krishna conscious hobby. You know, like, it's just like ordinary people. They have their work and then they have their hobbies, right? Isn't it? So have a Krishna conscious hobby. Have something that you really enjoy. First, also, we should enjoy our ordinary activities. We shouldn't have ordinary activities that we don't like. But have a life that's full in Krishna consciousness, that meets all of your needs. Because otherwise, when there's a need, it will get fulfilled somehow or other. It's just like people who are starving. They'll usually end up begging or stealing food. Most people who are starving will not just starve. You follow? You know, when there's a need, it will assert itself. It's just like our ultimately all of our spiritual needs. They assert themselves in this material world, even though they can't be found here. We keep trying to get love, and we keep trying to get eternal life, and we keep trying to get knowledge, even though it doesn't exist here, because those are needs of the soul. So we also have a need for play and fun, which is reasonable since we're part of Krishna, and that's what he does all day. How could we be part of Krishna and not have any need for play and fun? Forget it. So if you think, you know, I'm going to have a life of 24/7 tapasya, and that way I'm going to keep out Maya, it will not work. The need for play and fun will assert itself, and then you'll find play and fun in some nonsense. So have a full life of Krishna consciousness that's satisfying. Prabhupada says that Krishna consciousness is not narrow or stereotyped. One place Prabhupada said, Krishna is not a narrow stereotype block. So there's so many activities that we can do in Krishna consciousness. And there's so much need for spreading Mahaprabhu's movement in so many ways. There's so many areas of spreading Mahaprabhu's movement that nobody's doing or nobody's doing very well. And there's so much opportunity for having desired services in Krishna consciousness. So this is my own suggestion for how to become free of accidental fall down. Hear with deep attention, so that one can recognize Maya from a distance. And have some introspection that what are the things that cause me to have accidental fall downs? Let me see if I can try to recognize them before I'm overwhelmed by them. Have good association, not only inspiring association, but correcting association. And have a full life in Krishna consciousness so that we're satisfied. So that we don't end up having an urge to find satisfaction in something else. What about willful fall down? Do any of us want to admit that we ever have a willful fall down? So willful fall down. For that is means going very deep into our Krishna consciousness so that we're satisfied on a very deep level. Having very deep, attentive chanting, a very attentive deity worship, attentive hearing, attentive whatever service we're doing, to do that very deeply and attentively, and to have deep association that fills us with the nectar of Krishna consciousness. Recently I had some correspondence with a person on the GBC who was asking me about a problem somewhere, and we were writing back and forth about this problem. It was a very ugly problem, and then at the end of one letter he said, I assume we're going to have more correspondence about this nectar. And I thought, you know, we really have to make sure that we also give each other something sweet, even in the midst of difficulty. So the next letter I wrote, I put a nice quote at the bottom of it about Krishna and Vrindavan. So have some association that's full of nectar, not just association of people who are talking about the weather or this politics or, you know, but people who are actually talking about Krishna. And then also Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a very good piece of advice, very interesting piece of advice for those who want to get rid of willful fall down, those who want to get rid of basically bad habits. You know, I know this is a problem. I know it's going to hurt my Krishna consciousness, and I do it anyway. I have some bad habit. Things that I read, things that I see, things that I say, things that I eat, things I hang out with, whatever maybe are particular bad habits. So he said the way to clear a bad habit and the lethargy that accompanies the difficulty of getting rid of it, because bad habits and lethargy go together, right? You've got a bad habit and you're like, oh, it's too hard to get rid of this. I don't want to do the work. How am I going to do it? Or maybe you've tried to get rid of it and you can't get rid of it. It keeps coming back. He said you meditate on Krishna kicking the cart. Kicking the cart. So the cart is inert matter. You all know that story, Krishna cart? Krishna kicking the cart? I'm going to be really tempted at I don't know if I should do this or not. Should I do this? Should I do something risky? Yes? No? Baby Krishna kicked the cart. It fell to the ground and broke apart. Baby... Sorry, I was a teacher for too many years. So you meditate on that pastime, how the cart just made of matter. You know, the other demons that Krishna killed, they came in the shape of a snake or a bull or a, you know, some sort of monster. But this demon was subtle in the matter, in the cart. It was a subtle ghost-type demon hiding in the cart. So the subtle bad habits that are like matter, this lethargy. And baby Krishna just touches the wheel of the cart. Just, you know, his little baby. This was said to be on his birthday, and Prabhupada talks about Janmashtami in that chapter. But he also talks about that it was when Krishna rolled over from his back to his stomach, which happens at about 3 months of age. So I'm wondering, because astrologically, they would celebrate their birthday, they would celebrate their monthly birth anniversary whenever, I believe it was, and I'm not an astrologer, but I believe it was whenever the moon went back into the birth star. So whenever the moon was again in Rohini, because the moon goes through all of the 12 zodiac signs and the 27 nakshatras every 28, 29 days. So that would mean there would be at that kind of birthday every month. And also they count conceptions. So if you have 9 plus 3 is 12, so maybe they considered his birthday that way. I'm not sure. But it was some sort of a birth celebration. They were having a big festival. Right, and there was all these things going on, and Mother Yasoda was giving charity, and Krishna fell asleep, and she put Krishna under a cart. So sometimes it's like that, you know, our life is so active, and this is going on, and that's going on, and we kind of put Krishna to sleep under a cart. And then he was crying, you know, and Krishna may be crying. I heard the Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati one time saw somebody's beads hanging up and said, "Don't let your beads cry." So Krishna may be crying, "You've forgotten me, you're not paying attention to me, you've just stuck me under a cart, you're not feeding me. You're so busy with what's going on in your life." And Mother Yasoda couldn't hear him because of the various noises. You know, so one may not, just like Bartmar, he couldn't hear. He's meditating, but he couldn't hear anything. And then baby Krishna's very small then, if you have some idea what a 3-month-old baby looks like. So I don't know if we have any 3-month-old baby in the community, but they're very tiny little things. And their feet are very small. Their feet are only like this big. And they're very soft. You know, they haven't started to walk yet. And so the skin on their feet is very, of course, Krishna is always very soft. And just touches. So what is a little baby's soft foot going to do when it touches something? Nothing. This was a big, heavy cart, but just touching the wheel, the whole cart collapsed. At which point Mother Yasoda realized that it wasn't a very safe place to put Krishna. And of course she picked him up and then she fed him and they were chanting mantras and they were using the brahmanas there, the wonderful brahmanas, then by the chanting of the mantras to restore the atmosphere and the big cowherd men, they put the cart back together. So whenever we are tempted to do a willful fall down, just think, kick the cart. Very simple little mantra. Kick the cart. And when the mind says, "Don't you want to do this?" Of course, if there's a bad habit, the mind's going to be very strong at first. And you've given into the mind so many times. You just kick the cart and go back, read the story. It's a big, heavy cart. And Krishna's just a little tiny baby. And he just touched the wheel of the cart and it collapsed. So in this way, one can give up willful fall down. So by giving up accidental fall down and giving up willful fall down, then one will not have to lament like Bharat. He's definitely lamenting in his dear body. Right? He was lamenting his death, it says here, so chantam. At the time of his death, he's lamenting. And as he enters into his new body, what a lamentation. What a lamentation to have a life of at least external devotion and then wake up in an animal body. How horrible. Again, this is not something we would wish even on our enemies. So Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness is like a razor's edge. One must be very careful. But we shouldn't take this as some sort of hellfire and brimstone. I got to be careful. But it should be kevalananda kanda. Our life should be so full of joy that we have no interest, that we naturally we don't want to have. Just like if someone has a very nice relationship, husband and wife, if they have a very nice relationship and they want to keep that relationship. So they avoid anything, either accidental or purposeful, that could allow them to get attached to somebody else. That's part of their loving relationship. It's not that they're walking around always in fear. I don't want to see that other woman. I don't want to see that other man. It's not that they're doing like that. But because they value the relationship that they have, therefore they structure their lives in such a way and they take care in such a way, in both positive and negative ways, we could say, to nourish and keep that relationship. So it should be like that, that we should have such happiness and such a full life in Krishna consciousness that we just don't want to do anything to disturb it, and therefore we're willing to take these sort of precautions. So thank you very much. Questions, comments, chastisements, additions, subtractions, corrections? Yes? Correct. Yes, but Ajamil was obviously less aware that what he was doing was going to lead to a fall down. He was less aware of he wasn't able to see the danger he was in. It's like he didn't really see the cliff until he was falling off it. He didn't even see the cliff when he fell off it. Whereas Bharat was aware at every step in this process that he was falling. He's talking about it. He's talking about, I gave up my Krishna consciousness. Ajamil was not, we don't have any indication that he even had any awareness like that. He had some awareness in the beginning. When he first saw the couple, it said he tried to control his mind and remember the instructions of his spiritual master. So he had some awareness in the beginning, but he didn't really understand what he was doing and how it would entangle him. So when I say advanced or beginning, I'm talking about for the thing. For whatever it is. You know, when you're very new in Krishna consciousness, practically everything is an accidental fall down when you have difficulty because you can't see anything. And as you progress, you're able to see more and more and more. You know, as you progress, you're able to see more and more subtle forms of Maya, correct? Right? Things that were too subtle to see previously, all of a sudden you can see them. And you can see, wait a minute, that's not good. I mean, just a very simple example. You know, when you're new in Krishna consciousness, you may not really understand how getting involved in criticism and politics is going to hurt your Krishna consciousness. You don't even see it as criticism in politics. You see it as service. You don't even code it properly. And if someone comes and says, you know, this is criticism in politics, you know it's not. But at a certain point you can see, oh, that's what it is. Or pride. You know, that as you progress, you can see that what you think is service is often not, isn't it? You can recognize it. Do you follow what I'm saying? So if I can't recognize that something is illusion, and I do it, that's an accidental fall down. I didn't mean to be an illusion. I didn't know it was illusion. I wasn't able to even see that it was illusion. At a certain point I may see, oh my goodness, you know, I've lost it. But once you're more cleansed, then you have much more of a vision that this thing is illusion. Does that make sense? You know more what you're getting into. Yes. Yeah. you're more aware of the you're more aware of the consequences. I mean, you may be, we're just like, you know, teenagers who smoke. If you say to them, "Is smoking harmful?" They're like, "Yeah, it's harmful. I know it's harmful." But do they really know? Do you follow what I'm saying? Do they really know? Do they really have an awareness that this is going to harm me? And then, you know, when they're dying of lung cancer at 28, they say, "I didn't think this would happen to me." Whereas if you're a doctor, it's different. You actually know that this is going to be the consequences. So Bart Marge actually knew what the consequences were of what he was doing. And John Mill didn't really understand so much. He had some understanding, but not so much. It sort of just happened to him. You know, it overwhelmed him. He wasn't able to see it. Is that reasonable? Try it. It's not an intellectual. Try it. If you know you have something in your life that's a bad habit, you know it's a bad habit, you know it's hurting you, you know you don't want to do it, and you've had trouble giving it up, the next time the mind says, "Let's do this," meditate on Krishna kicking the cart. And you can say, "Kick the cart." And the mind will bring it up again and just kick the cart. Meditate on Krishna kicking the cart. And it will gradually get easier and easier and easier to ignore the mind. The first time it'll probably be hard because you've had a habit of giving into the mind. Obviously, that's not the only thing to do. As I was saying, also to go deep into your practices and have a very nectarian association. Is there anything else? Yes, Prabhu. Well, why didn't he do that? We talked about that the other day. Today we were contrasting Bharat and Ajamil. The other day we briefly, not during the whole class, but briefly we were contrasting Bharat and Shivananda Sen. So Shivananda Sen dealt with a dog and uplifted the dog. Shivananda Sen didn't become a dog. The dog became a Vaishnava. And with Bharat, the deer didn't become a Vaishnava, Bharat became a deer. So that's kind of a different topic. How to deal with the people and the entities and the circumstances in our life in such a way that elevates us and elevates them rather than degrades us. But that's a different theme. But yeah, too bad he didn't name his deer Narayana. He named him Prince. The name he gave for his deer was Prince. Yes? That's a different topic. How do you know the difference beforehand, whether you're going to be able to uplift the dog or whether you're going to fall down and be a deer? Well, one thing is consult with authorities. Bharat Marge didn't consult with any authorities. He wasn't taking care of the deer as a service to the Lord. He was taking care of the deer in the mood of, "I'm the protector." Which is understandable. He had been the emperor as a service, but still he'd been the emperor. But he wasn't doing it as a service. He was doing it out of ego. Where Shivananda Sen was taking care of the dog as his service. That was his service, to take care of all the pilgrims who wanted to go to Jagannath Puri, and he saw the dog as another one of the pilgrims. Shivananda Sen didn't see the dog as an object of his sense gratification. Nor did he see himself as, "I'm the protector." He saw himself as, "I'm the servant of everybody who wants to go see Mahaprabhu. And this is one of the everybody's." So Shivananda Sen's mood was that of Krishna's servant, of Mahaprabhu's servant, and Bharat's mood was as an independent protector and independent enjoyer. So how can you tell? What's your mood? How can you tell what your mood is? You have to hear, you have to have association, so that you've got the clarity to understand what's going on in your own heart. And if you mess up, okay, get up again, fix it. Not that if I mess up once, that's the end. I mean, even you mess up so badly that you die messed up, it's not the end. So what to speak if I mess up so badly in the middle of this life, it's not the end. You know, Prabhupada says here, what's the end of this purport? He returns home back to Godhead. That's the end. And once you start, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati said that once somebody takes initiation, that he's going to return home back to Godhead. He said, except for very, 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 very rare cases. So the question is, you know, how long do you want the journey to be? How pleasant do you want the journey to be? How pleasant do you want the lessons to be? That's mostly the question. You know, it's a very nice, Krishna's college is a very nice college. Once you enroll and become an official student, the dean of the college guarantees that you're going to graduate. Now, how many remedial classes do you take? Does it take you 3 years or 7 years? You know, that's up to you. So even if we make a mistake, even if we become, you know, some difficult situation, it'll be okay in the end. That doesn't mean we have an attitude of, oh, we'll all be okay in the end. Oh, it doesn't matter what I do. Then it's going to be a long road. It may not, you know, and Krishna will. You know, he's very clever at getting you to move a little faster. But, you know, like what he's doing to Bharat. Prabhupada keeps making the point, this isn't ordinary karma, this is Krishna. Krishna's getting him to move faster by saying, okay, go in a deer body with human consciousness. But he could have moved faster in another way. He could have moved faster just by going to Pulaha Muni and saying, how do I deal with this deer? He didn't have to. It's not very pleasant to have human consciousness in a deer body. We would not recommend that as a process. Is that all right? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Oh, my God.